This film was approved under the Motion Picture Code of Self-Regulation.
And now...
We're thinking in terms of a film. The question is, what are we trying to do with this movie?
By George, that is a good question.
Is everybody happy? And let's go.
So again, welcome to Film From. We watch bad movies because sometimes things can be so bad they're good. That's what I was just saying. That's why we watch America's Funniest Home Videos, and it was on TV for 20 years because we secretly love awful things when they don't happen to us. Hi, my name's Chris. The question people ask me most is, hey, are those gills behind your ears? The second question they ask is, why should I listen to your bad movie podcast over all the other great movie casts? Well, first, you can listen to all of us. You don't have to choose. There's nothing that says you have to be monogamous with us. Go ahead and put other shows in your ear holes. It's okay, as long as they're safe. Second, I would motivate you to listen to Film Frown, like the actors in the films we watch are motivated. You listen because plot. So... I don't do this alone. You can hear the other clown loach in the aquarium chuckling. That's Paul. Say hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, see? Yeah. And our guest here in the tank with us is a freshwater shark, Armin. You may recognize him from our Montreal show last week.
Armin. Hello, hello. I would just like to preface this by saying that sharks are not as harmful as you think they are.
Yeah, Armin, introduce your folks in case they didn't listen because I've been talking too much.
So I'm a student at the Center for Digital Media here in Vancouver, and I do cartoony things and occasionally watch great movies.
And he's also the Vancouver president of the Brendan Fraser Van Club. But anyway, we were talking about Brendan Fraser when I was in Vancouver because Brendan Fraser. Yeah.
There's only one member now. One of them dropped out. That was Brendan Fraser.
He's not a fan. He did Inkheart. No. He's like, I can't even like myself anymore.
He thought I was slagging him off, I guess. So,
what I do on the show, what we do on the show is I painstakingly read these lengthy synopsis notes that I prepared while watching the movie, so I didn't really have to pay attention to the movie. I'm the lucky one. and then Paul and Armin will pop in anytime they like to stop me and put in a rewrite, say they like something, dislike something, or make a funny joke about Kevin Costner being like the poor man's Nick Cage.
Oh, God. I didn't even think about it that way. But now that you mention it, I guess I love Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I started thinking about it like when I was looking at my notes before the show. I was like, this movie has like Nick Cage written all over it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I will jump right into it because we're already there. The movie we watched for tonight's podcast is called Waterworld from 1995. It's a Kevin Costner film, not a Nick Cage film. It could be confusing. And
equal in quality.
Yes. The budget was $100 million, but when I was looking at some notes somewhere, I found that out. But then, of course, because the production company did little research on their filming location, which is off the main island, I believe, of Hawaii, sets were destroyed by 40-mile-an-hour winds, and production was stopped by not one, but three hurricanes to pass through. So the budget stretched to $175 million. It was the most expensive movie to date until 2 years later when Titanic was made. Yes. Which is kind of funny. It's like, oh, like the only other movie that probably used like – a huge water tank to film scenes, Titanic also spent millions of dollars.
Right. And in that one, the boat is supposed to sink.
Box Office Mojo also told me for the year 1995, this film, surprisingly, as we all were subject to watch it, is 12th overall in box office for 1995. It falls below the big winners that year of Toy Story and Batman Forever, Apollo 13. Another one was, I think, Seven came out in 95. And, of course, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Batman Forever, what a classic that one was.
Yes. Yeah.
That made more money than this?
Yes, Batman Forever made more money than this.
Wow.
That's sad, actually, I think.
Well, it's got Batman in the name.
Yeah, so. that's true. I would definitely consider Batman Forever a worse movie than this. But probably because it has Batman in the name and then was so horrible.
Yeah, see, I think whatever Armin decides to do after he finishes the master program, I think he has definitely a job in Hollywood because he just figured out a real formula thing. It's like, let's put Batman in the title.
Even if it has Nicolas Cage in it or right. Kevin Costner.
It's a movie about seven talking babies and they have to save the world, but it's called Batman Talking Babies. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But number 12... for the year puts it above some really good films, like kind of shocked me. It's above Braveheart and Outbreak, which are two movies I love.
That's strange. Was Outbreak the one with Dustin Hoffman, or am I totally off?
No, right. You are correct.
No, that's one. Yeah. Oh, I like that movie.
Yeah. We need to find the monkey, Patient Zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Waterworld actually make its money back based on the box office?
No, gross domestic was like $88 million. Yeah,
it wouldn't have even made its original budget back, let alone the hurricane-induced bloated budget.
They made the water tank back.
I was thinking the same thing. Like with that kind of a budget, like they would never make it back. I mean, I remember 1995. It wasn't too long ago for my old man brain and. I mean, probably in my small Midwestern town that I was living at the time, I probably paid $7 for my movie ticket then. So, yeah, you sell 10 million tickets and you're still nowhere close to the budget. So, yeah, this movie, it's got an interesting position. Yeah, the budget thing just blows my mind because that, I guess... One thing I read somewhere was that they did finally make the budget back when it came out on video. So some other crazy notes that I don't have, but I can pull them out of my brain from reading Wikipedia, was that not only is there one, but there are three live shows that Universal Studios did in at the same time to promote the movie, like in their parks.
Mm.
So there's like a Waterworld live show. And the crazy thing was, is according to currently Wikipedia, those shows are still going on in two of the parks in the year 2015.
Jeez. Does Kevin Costner make an appearance?
He might as well, right? I think it was like Universal Studios, like, you know, in the States. And then there was like one in Australia and Japan. I think those are the two that are still going.
I want to know like what. Like what kind of attraction even was, because I mean, I don't know what the movie's rated.
PG-13.
PG. Oh, well.
Yeah. So yeah. It actually had a description, I think, at the bottom of the Wikipedia article, and it said the water show, which is kind of funny if they were marketing it concurrently, takes place after the film. So, the woman that I think her name is Helen in the film. I just kept writing Triplehorn. She, I guess she goes back to the atoll and she tries to tell everybody that dry land is real and not a myth. And they're like, oh, you're crazy. And then like the Mariner character, Kevin Costner's character, like comes in and does some swap. Oh, she's followed by Dennis Hopper's character. And then the Mariner comes in to save her, and that's the whole water show.
Jeez.
But look at that. I just ruined the end. Sorry, folks. Real land is not a myth. You're sitting on it as you're listening.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people would have wanted to see that movie.
So it's funny. I'll jump into the synopsis. Just from the description that we're about to get into, this movie, like, every part of my body, like, when I'm watching it, is like, this is totally like a USA Up All Night movie with a budget. Like, this is like Rollerblade Warriors or Hell Comes to Frogtown or something. Like, this is just and it's not even like the plot that gets me. It's just the whole feel of the movie is very just B. But that's just me. So
no, I'd agree with that. It's not just you.
I mean, when you say B, you mean like B letter grade. I mean, that's pretty high. I don't know. I mean, like, what it's trying to do is it's trying to make a world, and like, world building is pretty hard. You have to, first of all, convince everybody that this whole post-apocalyptic cities are all submerged under the water thing is real, which is done by like a single sentence at the beginning as they narrate it. So if you don't buy into that, then the rest of the movie, I mean, like, it opens with Costner pissing into a bottle. So I don't think everybody was in on it from the start.
Yeah, there's that. I guess my comparison to like some of those cheesy movies that I mentioned, like, I don't even know. I'm sure I've seen it, but I don't remember it. But Rowdy Roddy Piper, the wrestler, was in the film Hell Comes to Frogtown, which takes place on a planet where like everybody's a frog person or something. But it's that kind of deep world building where, like, I guess, like you're saying, like, if you don't get that first hook, then you don't believe anything. And so I think, yeah, part of you are, I think you're correct in that. But I also think, maybe it's not only that the world's not believable, but it's just cartoonish.
Well, yeah, it's definitely not because the acting is amazing and everything else is wrong. I think it's, like, what it tries to do, at least, is admirable, I guess. But it's just execution, I think, is totally off.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like they played it wrong. Because you know from – they don't even get into the opening, you know, sentence or two where they just show you – they do – maybe this is one of the first instances of like screwing with the studio logo at the beginning, but they show the Universal Globe, right? And then they show the Oceans Rise. So
yeah, that's when they spent all their $100 million, and then they're like, oh wait, we forgot to get that whole beginning part. Never mind, just use the logo in Universal. Just zoom into that. Nobody will notice.
And I feel like if they had, because clearly, most of the characters do not realize that there has ever been land. In fact, I think everybody we've met, except the little girl, has never seen dry land. And the little girl isn't telling them, yes, there is dry land. She's not confirming or denying anything. And so they could have easily played this as if it was Planet of the Apes, and you don't realize that it is Earth until, like, you know, three quarters of the way through the movie where he takes her underwater and shows her the city, right?
Oh, that's a spoiler alert, man. Okay.
I know, I'm jumping way ahead. But just in the purpose of making my point, I feel like it could have been a better movie if there had been more mystery to what was going on around them and not just a plot that happens while they're trying to find land.
The acting wasn't all bad. I'm not sure who plays the woman.
Tom Cruise's wife in The Firm.
Is it Jean?
Yeah, I mean, like, her performance was you know, like, not bad or anything. The kid was all right. It's just that, like, with that kind of character, I get that they're trying to make him into a douche, and they're trying to make him into like a likable douche. But the vibes I was getting throughout the whole film just felt a little bit R-wordy. I mean, he hits women and he just like he's not a nice guy. Like his character.
True.
He doesn't really do anything to be redeemable. And as I was watching it, I'm like, maybe he'll like realize his actions are kind of, you know, are really bad and he'll change his ways. And then he'll go to be more likable. But it's more that he was exactly the same and then everybody just grew to like him.
<It's>, right.
It's not like Dr. Yeah. House, where he's like he's always just close to the edge and he's, you know, pissing people off, but like just a little bit, and like he'll know when to not cross the line. But in the end he's still a good guy because he'll get, you know, he'll solve the medical mystery or just, you know, over like save
yeah, the day. It's important person. To him to save lives. He just yeah. doesn't really care about feelings.
He doesn't care about feelings. But this guy, he doesn't care about feelings. He hits people. I don't really know what his motivations are to even do anything. I mean, he grows yeah. limes. What was that all of? What? Like, I mean, he likes growing his own food.
Yeah,
there's really no, like, there's nothing at play. I don't know what's driving his character.
His yes. motivation is muddled at best.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Ooh, nice pun.
Boom.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we could talk about that forever. Probably better than the synopsis, actually.
So what is it? We open to the Universal logo, showing us that the Earth has been flooded. And then, in case that wasn't enough, they tell us the Earth has been flooded by global warming, essentially, right?
And then the camera swings down to the only likable character in the film, the boat. and then, as Armin alluded to, we are treated to someone peeing into a container who then pours it into some sort of contraption and, yes, drinks it.
Yep.
And he spits some onto a plant, which I found offensive. Like, don't harm plants in film, please.
Although he has nitrogen and nitrogen is fertilizer. I'm not sure.
Right. So he should have just peed directly on the plant.
Exactly. I wonder if that's how you can grow plants. Anyway, continue.
So, Costner's boat then runs into something. Like he has like an anchor or something down. Apparently he's dredging. And so he puts some beads or bearings into a container that sort of slowly drop down. This is a timer device. And he just jumps in the water. And then we get a treat of lots of trinkets and montage of stuff on the boat. It's a weird boat design. It's like a catamaran, but it's three pontoons, so it's a trimaran, I read somewhere. I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. Why did I not think of that earlier?
Mm-hmm. I think of the set design some credit. Like, there's at least detail put in everywhere. Yeah. Not necessarily, didn't necessarily think everything through, but it's just a lot of stuff. And I guess it's a bit overwhelming at first. You're like, oh, cool. This is like a different kind of, you know, a different world to be in. But yeah, I don't know, the peeing and the... Okay, this is what I don't understand. Why don't you just purify salt water?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much more... In pee, or in urine, as the scientists would say, there's, what is like, nitrogen. There's all this sort of other toxic material.
Yes.
You know, calcium, all other organic compounds. So with salt water, all he has to do is boil it. He just has to boil the water out, like distill it, and like collect it over, you know, or like that's it. Because, you know, salt's boiling point is, you know, like way higher than water.
Yeah.
So if he just boiled water, he would have drinking water. I don't know why he had to like pee into some sort of a contraption. And I don't even think NASA still knows how to. But I know I saw something the other day, like where. Some video with Chris Hadfield just showing how they conserve water, like on board the ISS, and he was like talking about this new thing, like, oh, we can also purify urine, and it's like this $1 million contraption sort of, and here we have like Costner in post-apocalyptic water world. They don't know how to like desalinate water. But they know how to purify their own pee. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
That threw me off, I think.
Okay. I totally, to your point, the same thing. Like, I get it. But then the other thing that bothered me about it was like, So the big joke, or not the big, the big truth is, like, if you like pop, like I used to drink all the time before I found out I was diabetic, like, the thing is, hey, that's made with wastewater. Like,
what?
Our wastewater that we flush down the toilet gets treated at wastewater plants, and then they make soda and pop out of it. And so I'm assuming that process takes a lot longer than what it took Kevin Costner to, like, pee into a container and pour it through, like, four filters.
With his homemade, like, science fair device, which, like, I don't even – I mean, I guess it is sci-fi. Would you call this movie sci-fi?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I call it fi for sure, fantasy.
I don't think any of this stuff actually happened at any point. Correct me if I'm wrong, I guess. No. I guess they have some leeway with their gadgetry. And I don't know if I would call any of it – I mean, there's definitely no cyberpunk or – I don't know if you would call it any of it steampunk. It's something punk.
It's in my notes, I had Von Dutch punk. I feel like everybody is just wearing a tore up baseball cap that says Von Dutch on it. So anyway, Costner, he's in the water. We don't know where he is. And we're seeing this little montage of the boat. And then we see some hands taking berries or fruit from his plant. And then we cut to a lot of those beads or whatever in the timer device contraption. And then the boat begins moving because the timer has activated something. And we see, like, an airbag surface in the water. And then Costner flips onto the boat after throwing something into the netting of his boat. And they turn out to be – they look like ski boots. And so he's trying them on. And then he sees the other boat because obviously there was someone there stealing his fruit. And so he runs to the cannon at the front of his boat. And the other boater is like, hey, I didn't board you. Boy, you sure were down there a long time. And Costner's like, oh, yeah, there's like a hole in my hull. So there's plenty of space to breathe.
of course.
And he's like very suspicious because and so he says, you know, I've seen your boat before, but not you. And the guy's like, oh, you know, the original owner died. And so he was like, I was giving you another hour before I upgraded to your boat, buddy. Ha ha. Little joke.
yeah.
And Costner's like, well, I should thank you for not stealing my boat. But, you know, come on over or something. And the guy's like, oh, no, no, that's fine. I have enough supplies. I was, you know, just recently like at a place. It's only 8 days east if you need to go there. And now Costner's like really on edge because this is, you know, something's up. Like he probably stole something from his boat. And all of a sudden they see smokers. Yes, Philip Morris is in this movie. the guy like then greedily shows off his stolen fruit and then sails off because he thinks, oh, well, he's like, you're screwed. Like, you know, you'll never get your sail up in time and the smokers are going to get you. And they're going to get him because the smokers, possibly called that because they're burning gas, are on jet skis. Yeah. So they race after Costner's bag that's in the water. But guess what? It's too late. He's already got it. His boat can auto deploy the sails thanks to some weights and pulleys and other mechanisms. So he just like flicks the switch and everything just pops out. So he whips around, picks up his bag, and then is this? Yeah, when he races to the fruit thief, he just like mows that guy's sails down between his like trimarans. And presumably the smokers then raid that guy because he's now broke down. So that was like, to Armin's point, Kevin Costner is not a good guy. He's kind of a jerk. Whether or not his fruit was stolen or whatever.
Yeah. He definitely has no compunction about killing people who have wronged him, at least.
Which is fine because, I mean, you do see that in, you know, in a lot of protagonists. And if you look – I don't know. Like if you look at a character like Walter White, like obviously he's pretty evil. But they at least try to ground him or her in something.
Yes.
And I don't really know what it is. And this is supposed to be like, keep in mind, this is supposed to be the big character reveal. And so far we've got like purified urine, some talk about, I don't know, like just fruit.
Yeah.
And then all this.
It's Drifter like, code.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's like the screen time's kind of being wasted here. If they put a little bit less action and maybe some more dialogue. I mean, I don't know, his acting's not that great to begin with, but if there was some more, but more of a reveal of his character, either through a conversation with someone else or something, that would have been pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
See, but you know. I think the point that Armin is trying to make, and or you know, instead of putting words in Armin's mouth, I'll just say to the listening audience of the podcast, if you've never seen the film. This character in this film is most likely autobiographical. So Kevin Costner pees in a jar at home and drinks it. and he's not a nice guy. So anyway, yeah. What were you say?
Oh, no, it's just, I mean, that's all final, but I was always, I don't know, I guess we'll get to it, but I was always waiting for that moment in the movie where there'll be some sort of a big twist. I never really got it, I think. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but
the problem with Costner's character, I think, as you've already said, like you, it's not developed, but the way that we could develop this character in a film, we can show him doing something, which they try to do, but dialogue really helps. And I was really tempted to make a supercut of this film of all of his dialogue, because I bet you that movie would be like 2 minutes and 22 seconds long.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to get to know the main character when all he does is like grunt and cut people's
grunt,
hair.
Yeah. And yeah. Hit and shoot.
So, so Costner, he shows up at this, town, which they call Atoll. It's like a little round reef kind of a thing in the water somewhere. And they've got walls. And he's like, he shows them some trinkets. Like, he's like, I'm here to trade. And they're like, we don't need any traders. So he pulls out a jar of dirt. And they immediately open the gate because dirt.
means land, which yeah. No one's ever seen before.
Exactly. What is this mystical thing? So it's funny because the town, I would call him the sheriff. He's like, he steps over to the boat and he puts his foot on it all aggressive like, and he's like, you know me. And Kevin Costner's like, I know who you are. I know what you are. Like, he just assumes he's like a sheriff or something. And so the guy's like, good. Then, you know, if you look for trouble, you'll find more than you can handle.
Whoa.
Give you some dialogue samplings there because it was badass. And then that guy does nothing the rest of the movie.
How many Oscar nominations did this movie get again?
I think they got a couple for sound design, actually.
Oh, did they? Well, yeah, it's done by – yeah. Who actually composed the score?
I'd have to Google that, but I love Paul or you do that, but I did read that the original person that made the score, they fired him and hired someone else. And I was they fired him because they said, according to Wikipedia, that the music sounded too ethnic. And I was like, wow, because there is like a vibe in the soundtrack for this that's very, I don't know if ethnic's the right word, but it's definitely like it's got some kind of slant to it. It's not just like a score. It's like kind of Caribbean or something. I don't know.
James Newton Howard.
Oh, no kidding. Yep. I mean, he did. He's done a lot. Did he do Batman Begins? I'm not sure. What am I saying? it sounds really familiar. Hunger Games, I think. And that's all I remember. I don't know.
Yes, Hunger Games, Mockingjay. Let's see.
Believe it or not, aside from the nomination for sound design, it was nominated, I think, for costuming, and it was also nominated for like 4 or 5 Razzie Awards. So,
what? That the, so that those are like awards for a
bad
film being bad. Okay.
Yeah, the Razzies. Yeah. So Costner's walking around town with his dirt, and of course, just like when you're trading gold, the best way to find out if it's real dirt is to put it in your mouth. So that's what the local dealer does.
So what are they comparing it to? They've never tasted it before. Nobody's seen land, touched land. They're like, oh, this is dirt. How do you know? I don't know.
I don't know. Tastes like dirt.
Would they even have a concept of dirt? Would it be like in a Matrix when they're like, oh, how do we know what chicken tastes like? I've never had chicken. They're just having,
So they try to lowball him. And they want to know where he's got it. And Kevin Costner's like, oh, I traded for it somewhere else. And I don't know where they got it from. And then we just sort of randomly cut to a man telling a story about a tattooed girl to a bad looking ginger man, evil carrot top, as I call him in my notes. he's trying to get some, he's telling the story in hopes that evil carrot top will buy him some hydro. Because that's how future people talk about water. That's drinkable. Hydro.
Hydro. Yep.
And he called the whole world Water World at some point, didn't he?
Yes, so. He did.
Very, that was a little bit weird. I don't think that's, I don't know. Whenever the title of a movie is brought into play, I just don't know what to make of it because it just kind of breaks the fourth wall. But,
Oh, just let me smack my mic.
Yeah, I mean it could make sense that they might not call it Earth anymore since there is no Earth really to stand on longer, but calling it Water World is weird.
Yeah. But they are chatting in a bar-like setting, and the man tells Evil Carrot Top that this tattoo supposedly is a map to dry land, but hey, it's just a myth, right? And so then we meet Gene Triplehorn, otherwise known in movies as Lipsticks and Eyebrows, or just one lipstick, I suppose, because I swear, like, she has like a lot of lipstick in the Firm with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's all lipstick and eyebrows. So mean. So she's working at the store of empty shelves and she serves up the hydro. It's your combination supermarket bar as we always wanted. But the future's cool. And the little girl pops out and Jean quickly rushes her back inside, but not before we see the tattoo in question. And Costner, he tries to buy like a tomato plant while Evil Carrot Top tries to sweet talk him out of his boots. That sounded dirty. He just wanted Kevin Costner's boots, not to knock his boots. I think. So then Costner, he buys the plant and even the empty shelves in the store because, you know, when you got trinkets, you need somewhere to put them. And on his way to the General Lee of the Sea, his boat, the people of the hat religion stop him and ask him if he will impregnate a girl for them because, you know, too much inbreeding on their small atoll is kind of a bad thing. So,
which doesn't really make sense because that whole family, there was like a Chinese person there, yes, or some Asian person there, a black person. They were
actually a very diverse set,
very
of people.
Diverse group, and I guess they're still having inbreeding issues, which I'm not sure if that really makes sense. And if there was inbreeding, like everybody would start looking the same.
Yeah, and I thought that was like, I don't know what the future is like on Waterworld, but that is just like a weird thing. Like when I got off the plane and decided to move to Edmonton, as soon as I got off the plane, someone's like, hey, I was wondering if you could impregnate my daughter. Like, like you got to take
not me, today.
You know, take me to Tim Hortons or something and just approach this like slowly. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but I'm just saying.
Buy me some poutine.
For the daughter at that point. I'm not sure if she had any say in all that, or if that's just like as like a rite of passage or something in this weird like water world. It's like waiting for somebody. I guess the whole town seemed to revere him at that point because he had brought dirt. Back soil.
Yes.
I'm not sure that like before that what he'd done. Like if he's always been bringing back weird trinkets or whatnot. I mean, like he has to find a place to live, but.
Well, we'll get to it because we're coming up on it. But I mean, the secret that he's hiding with the boots and, you know, not so well with his head. But like the secret that he's hiding from people, like he's done this before and he knows how much dirt trades for. So it just seems like kind of weird that he's he doesn't try hard enough to hide the gills behind his ears. Jeez, wear a scarf, man.
Yeah.
So. And continuing to build this character, like this lovable ruffian we like, when they offer their daughter to him, he's like, you don't have anything we're trading. You're dying. And he walks away.
Jesus.
And the people of the hat are kind of like, whoa, dude, like we just offered you some fine tail. and like they're basically... their argument, and I can't even like word it like any worse than like what they did in the film, but I'll try because that's what I do. But they're like, no man can be out to sea that long and not be down for some booty. He must be hiding something.
He must be right. A mutant. Yeah.
So they call the cops and they're like, this guy is obviously a spy because he didn't want to get laid. So the local law like says, okay, hold on, we're not going to let you back on the boat. And he just pushes them aside because I'm Kevin Costner and I don't like anybody in this film. And in the tussle, one of the guys sees Costner's flappy ear, which means he's a mutant with gills. Oh, no. And so the community, like they cut to the classic cliche shot of like some crazy looking dude, like shouting mutant and pointing. Straight out of every awesome movie ever.
I just love like the classic shot of somebody yelling mutant.
Yeah.
Just picturing that in other movies. Such a classic there.
Well, whenever we don't like someone, there's always that close up of a man's face shouting.
Of the telltale, yeah.
And Costner, as he's in the tussle also, he just shoots a guy in the foot. He gets knocked in the water. And so we get our first water knife fight. Yay. But it's only very brief because they're both caught in a net. Because if you live on a water world, like your biggest weakness is nets.
True.
So the sheriff dude shows up to stop everybody because they just want to beat the crap out of mutants. Who doesn't? He's the... not the sheriff. He's the peacekeeper, you see. That's what he calls himself. You've hired me to keep the peace. You pay me in dirt.
So, what did he get in exchange when he gave the dirt, by the way? What were those? Like, what currency were they using?
Oh, yeah.
They called them chits, right?
It reminded me of, like, the caps from Fallout. I don't know. Like, it was a little bit similar, but shit. I don't know what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. So he won't let them beat him up. And we basically, I think they just end up putting him in a cage. And so Costner's like hanging from this cage above the atoll, watching people loot his stuff from his ship. And Evil Carrot Top leaves on a rowboat and he like points to Kevin Costner's boots because he's got his boots on. Ha ha. Isn't that funny? And then we
all see, these props I looted from your boat are really going to help my comedy routine, mister.
His they cut to his feet because they're webbed. Oh, I see, like gills and webbed feet.
Yep.
But this part also, I mean, we're probably spending way too much time debating like the bad plot points, but you have to ask yourself, when you live on a planet that you've decided to call Waterworld and you have a tiny little town, when a ginger leaves on a rowboat, where the fuck is he going? It's like the middle of the night and he's like, see y'all later. I'm going to go out the gate now. And they're like, oh, have fun fishing? What are you?
Yeah.
Doing watery things.
Yeah, exactly. He's he's really into like water ballet, but he's too embarrassed to practice in town.
Water polo.
So we cut to the little girl and she's drawing animals. Hey, that's weird. There's this crazy scientist guy who's played by Michael Jeter of The Green Mile or The Fisher King. That's the actor's name. He's analyzing like drawings of the tattoo in his quirky character way. And it's the future. So his accent is whatever the hell he feels like.
I think everybody's accent in this movie is whatever they feel like. I don't even know like what – I don't know why everybody even has to have an accent. Because they didn't really establish the foreign language too well.
Right.
So at one point I was like, wait, is this something that's real? Or am I like – is this just, you know – they didn't have I don't know what it was called.
I do.
Oh, okay. What was the language called?
Now, later on, like when he talks in a language and Gene Triplehorn is like, what the hell are you talking in? He's like, it's Portugreek.
I thought I heard Portuguese and I'm like, there's no way that's Portuguese.
Well, and it's funny because I feel like that's the same language he was speaking in the beginning, but
yeah.
It was
so there's already two different languages. Like they haven't made the distinction between these two foreign languages that don't exist.
But then I read in like Wikipedia or somewhere, like, or maybe it was IMDb, that the first scene when he's talking to the other guy in the boat who stole his fruit, he's actually speaking Hindi. And I was like,
Oh.
Okay. Because I thought it was, you know, Portuguese or Greek. Okay, I got it.
Wait, so that was actually Hindi?
But they said it was actually Hindi, and I was like, so why don't you just say he's speaking Hindi in the rest of the movie? Like,
that is pretty strange.
So, anyway.
The accent that's made up. He speaks, and he's like, ooh.
Hey, yeah.
Look at these drawings or whatever.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out the map because they want to get to dry land land. At some point the conversation turns and like the little girl's like, well, maybe, you know, the, you know, fish tar over there knows where it is. which is what the critics called this movie, fish tar, because it was so bad. So he decides to go see Kevin Costner and his web feet and his gills, and scientist him is very curious. And Costner's like, look, I'll make a deal with you. The crazy Jeter guy, Michael Jeter's chased away by the constable or the peacekeepers. Like, get away from there. So anyway, fast forward, Costner's been sentenced to recycling, which we saw when he entered town because there was some woman dead and they just dumped her into what looked like Soylent Green.
Wouldn't it make the most sense to just dump the dead bodies into, you know, water? So then they'll like fall to the bottom of the ocean and then you won't have this like murky pit. Sort of like, yeah, pit, which is going to stink up the whole town. And it's just like putrefying. Like, I don't know. Water will just turn bodies into like – or body fat into like soap. So that's like the ideal place you could get rid of anybody. So I didn't understand that part. But I guess he knows how to swim. So they had to think of something so that when you go back and watch it, you're like, oh, well, they had to try to kill him in the tar. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, well, see you later, buddy. And they start lowering him into it, and uh-oh, smokers. So there's a bunch of gas boats, barges, jet skis, and guns, and Dennis Hopper. And let's not forget airplanes pulling water skiers towards a jump through the Baby Atoll. It's quite the water show.
Yeah, yeah. At this point, I thought I was back 12 years old at SeaWorld again.
It's kind of like we've watched some older films on this podcast, and you quickly realize that like in the 70s and 80s, the two things that they could do before CGI, were light someone on fire and car chases. So like every movie in the 70s and 80s and TV show is like, oh, that guy got lit on fire. He's just at a tea party. What's happening?
All right.
And so you're like, well, thank goodness we're not watching one of those old movies. And then in this movie, they're just like, what kind of stunts can we do in the water? Water skis? Okay.
Right.
So yeah, somewhere in the battle, Jeter gets knocked into this lever, which starts inflating a balloon. Hey, their escape plan to the mythical land, I suppose, is to take a hot air balloon. Meanwhile, a smoker gets thrown into Costner's cage and they both go into the recycle. Jeter's balloon is automated, so he can't stop it. He jumps on like the little basket, the sled, and but Triplehorn and the tattoo, they're too late. So they free Costner. They basically say, we'll let you out if you take us with you. And of course, he just nods because he doesn't want to speak any dialogue in this damn film. and oh, lo and behold, as they're swashbuckling, because, hey, it's a water film, Evil Carrot Top is there. He's with the bad guys. Who knew? So Triplehorn, she's trying to like open the gate so that Costner can get the boat out. But through the battle, the boat gets stuck. So what we need to do is some more swashbuckling. And as they leave, Costner spears this gun that this gunboat, this barge with these like huge guns. I even read the term for this gun, but it's like four guns. And he spears the boat. And what he does is he pulls it around with him while the guy's shooting because it's so loud he can't tell what's going on. And oops, he just shot his own guys on jet skis and Dennis Hopper's boat. So we have to play happy music at that point.
See, this whole thing is a cartoon, basically.
It really, yeah.
I think this is one of those instances where the score is really well done and does not belong in this movie at all.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
I feel like any score would be like really well done in comparison to just whatever this is, because I don't know, like there were times where, you know, because of the score, I'm like, oh, this is sort of a little bit of a happy film or kind of a comedic film.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is like, I mean, it's corny, but it can fit in like a PG setting. But
yes,
it's, you know, it's like PG-13 just trying to be kind of really edgy. There's, you know, implied, you know, sex. There's people dying for sure. But the issue is that in the end, like, it doesn't really, it just feels like it's all clashing. I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I don't know if this is like a 90s thing.
Right. Yeah.
Which it definitely can't be, because I mean, The Matrix came out 4 years later. That's a brilliant film. So it's not like everything around this time was you know,
this
trying
film,
to figure, sort itself out. And they had a smaller budget too.
We'll get into it later because I have all kinds of questions about it, but we should get into it soon. But Dennis Hopper like is totally a cartoon in this movie. And I did read that the original writer of this script, he wrote this in 1986. So that helps a little bit figure out why things are weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally written as a children's adventure film. And then they brought in some other writers to fix it and update it. And now it became whatever we want to call this. in fact,
there were times where you felt like you could, like if you were a kid, you could, the young girl could be like a proxy to you, like to the film. You're like, oh, well, you know, like she's rooting for the, you know, for the protagonist, or she's like strong, standing up for herself. But then there's just like, you know, I'm going to burn you with my cigarette and I'm going to smash this bottle on your head. And it's just, it's kind of obscene in a way.
Well, and then the scene when they try to trap them, like they've killed everybody on that floating buoy and just like the dead bodies everywhere. I'm like, this is not a children's movie.
Yeah.
So after the battle, Evil Carrot Top is running around the little city looking for the tattoo girl, and he and Dennis Hopper interrogate some people. It looks like, unfortunately, Dennis Hopper has lost an eye in the battle, and so he's not exactly pleased about that.
He's a pirate now. He's got a patch on.
Yeah, totally.
Actually, no, that's way later.
And then, so Triplehorn's on the boat now with him, and she's kind of bugging him because, you know, he's obviously been to dry land, this curmudgeon man, because he's got dirt and all this weird stuff. And he's like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll take you to dry land. We got to kill that girl. she's like,
did
what
say
the
kill
what?
Her, or did he just say, like, we're leaving her behind?
he said the girl has to die, I think.
Jeez, that.
Yeah.
PG-13.
He basically laid it out as, we don't have enough water, so one of the two of you has to go.
Yes. He's like, my boat is all messed up. It's taking on water, and yeah, we're not all going to make it. And so Triplehorn's like, you know, take me instead. And then she's like, you know what, instead of killing me. And so she disrobes because, you know, she's going to use her body as currency, which is what I do. So
is that the thing? This is the strongest female role, like lead in the film. Like, I mean, it like comes down to her. Like, he didn't even ask, like, can I, like, well, what else can we do? Can we, like, you know, can we, like, get it on? She's just like, oh, no, this is, like, the first thing on my mind.
Yeah.
If you won't let me bring the girl with me, let me just have – oh, you don't want to do that. Okay. I guess – okay. Well, that's fine, too, I guess.
Yeah. He awkwardly touches her breast and says –
tries to, at least. And then she's like, flinches kind of.
Yeah. And he's, like, doing it. And then he's like, man, you've got nothing I need, and walks away.
What a thing to be told to.
While you're naked. Yeah, exactly. Like, I would need years of therapy for that. which is why no one sees me when I podcast. Boom. Triplehorn, she's mad now. So she grabs a spear gun and she's like, look, I'll probably shoot you unless you take us to dry land. And he simply drops the sail on her. And then what's kind of like, I was like thinking, you know, he's really mean, but I don't think he's actually violent. But I forgot. You're right. At this point, like, he drops, not only does he drop the sail on her, he just leisurely gets up and picks up an oar and hits her. While she's under the sail.
I think he shoves her several occasions, too.
Yeah. And then the gun drops out from under the sail, and she's in the... Okay. So, meanwhile, Dennis Hopper is getting a new fake eye put into his head. Someone is painting it. and it's quite a... Dennis Hopper in this film... I didn't put this in my notes, and it's somewhere in my brain, but he is what's really interesting about Dennis Hopper is I think, like you were saying with the little girl, like, she, if you were a child watching this film, she could maybe be your proxy. In other words, like, actors try to portray their character in a way that we as an audience will empathize with them.
Yeah. Like, it's sort of a general way, but, like, yeah, it's, you know, specific enough to you. You're like, oh, I can relate to this situation. I can put myself into this world.
And I feel like what Hopper is doing in this film, whether it's just like the dialogue or just him, he kind of does something almost the opposite. Like, he's in the audience with us. So a lot of his dialogue is just like almost making fun of the situation and himself around him.
He's like making fun of that kind of villain role, which is not the best thing to be doing if you're trying to, you know, try to tell us that this world is worth believing. And then it's like making fun of itself. I'm not sure, like, who's the idea of that.
Yeah. He's almost a satirical villain.
Yeah.
And I actually, I mean, like you said, it doesn't help the believability of the film, but I actually enjoyed, like, what he was doing. I was like, this is when we're going to get to the next Dennis Hopper part, because he's ridiculous. you know, at this scene, like when everyone like, cause he's the big boss, like, so everyone's like, oh, that fake eye looks great. And then he turns to like some kid and he's like, what do you think? And he's like, it looks like shit. And he's like, I love kids. They're so honest or something like that. Like, just like, not, we didn't need any of this. So apparently there's a problem in the pit that Dennis Hopper has to go examine. So because Dennis Hopper, for whatever reason, they decide to cut the music that we've been doing and we get the Peter Gunn theme. I don't know why. they play the Peter Gunn theme while Dennis Hopper is driven, quote unquote, in a car to the pit to learn that the black stuff is really low. Apparently they're running out of fuel. So he, of course, because this is like a character, children's TV show or movie villain, he's like, okay, well, let's, you know, cancel the tractor pulls and all non-essential stuff until we get that girl.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so meanwhile, Costner is pretty pissed on his boat because the little girl is using his crayons to draw all over his ship. Yeah, there's that. Probably the most dialogue he spoke in the film so far.
Is that before or after he tries to chuck her off the boat?
That's before.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, again, like, that's the problem with this character is I have in my notes, like, Baymax from Big Hero 6 has more dialogue than Costner. So Costner is like mad because the girl talks too much. Oh yeah. And here's, he throws her overboard. And of course, she can't swim in Waterworld. So, so Triplehorn jumps in after her and, Costner's like, ugh. So he drops the sails and turns around to let them get back on and, the sails are down and here comes Jack Black in the smoker airplane. I read that he was like in this movie and then I was like, I didn't really in this scene, you can hardly tell it's him. It's not until later when he takes off the goggles and stuff. But
it'd be great if he did like some kind of Kung Fu Panda voice or something like that while he was.
So there's,
well, I mean, it's a kid's movie after all.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
As he's attacking.
That's really accurate.
Thanks.
Yeah. So they start shooting the boat and flying around a circle, and Costner goes inside the hull to find his spear rifle. But Triplehorn's like, man, this guy's chickened out. And luckily, the smoker's gun jams, so they have all this time to not be murder, death, killed. Triplehorn decides, I'm going to go up and use that cannon on the front of the boat and shoot the plane. And she's a good shot. What can you say? She shoots a moving airplane. And she actually hits the tail where the gunner is. And that's great. He's dead. But now the plane is stuck to the boat and just flies around in a circle.
It's basically the Hoth scene where,
yes,
where they're all going around AT-ATs.
And so Costner's like, holy crap, I got to go cut that loose. But too late, like the cannon gets like all tangled up in the mast and everything, and Costner is like mad pissed, so he throws Triplehorn down. When he tries to go cut it loose, Jack Black actually shoots the line in the plane and flies off. But so after all of that, Costner is just so angry that like
she cuts, I'm gonna give you a haircut, and then
yes, next. And he throws her down the ship and chops her hair with a machete. Little girl's,
I swear, like, that was like more out of necessity for like the rest. They're like, oh my God, we can't, you know, there's a lot of action in this movie. We really need to cut our hair for this. And oh, okay, let's just invent this plot point here where he's angry and he has to cut your hair.
Yeah. And the little girl's like, wow, that's like out of line, bro. And so he cuts her hair too. And so, Dennis Hopper is using comedic villain logic. So he's like, we're going to intercept them. They know that we know where they are. So he'll think that we think he'll change like his course.
But yeah, so they're going to go the same path they were planning on.
And Costner and gang, again, this is not a children's movie at this scene either. They run into a drifter, crazy drifter man who's been out a very long time.
What gave you that clue? What kind of gave you that impression? must be the what is it? Oh, the fake accent coming back.
Yes.
The very rapey scene that follows.
Well, and he can't even I'm not there yet, but I think if I spend more time in this office working and then podcasting, I'll get there. But he pretty much just talks to himself too. He doesn't really, he'll answer people's questions, but then he'll be like, I can't believe you asked me that. I should answer him. I'll answer you now. Like he's, so Triplehorn trades him a necklace for a fishing pole. And crazy drifter guy is like, you know what I got? I'm going to trade you something for both those women, buddy. I've got, is it dirt? No, it's paper. He's got paper, everybody. Yeah, paper.
Yep.
And so Costner's like, oh, yeah, paper, rock and roll. Okay, you can have a half hour with Triplehorn. this scene.
Don't worry, I've got her consent. I mean,
yeah,
right. I'll just transfer it over to you.
Right, exactly.
I'll wire it over.
I'm going to be honest. When she got on the boat, she took off her clothes. So, I mean, yeah. This must be what she wants, right? Yeah. So, I guess we're supposed to think he's... I can't understand, are we just supposed to think he's jealous? Or maybe he is a good guy under all that ruffian... But he decides to stop the drifter before he can do anything, which leads to a knife fight that we only hear because PG-13, because they're in the hull of the boat. And they just ditch the body and they raid the guy's boat for supplies. And the woman, she's going a little crazy, yelling at him about how hungry they are, and that's why they were trying to trade. And he's like, "You'll never catch anything with that stupid fishing pole." And
so it's just, a Deus Ex Machina, basically.
Yeah, he grabs a double-ended spear and he ties it to a ski rope, and he jumps in the water to avoid the women complaining about not having food. I figure, but then he's just eaten by a big giant fish. There's some explosions in the water, and ta-da, there's lots of dinner for everyone. Costner uses himself as bait, I guess.
I don't know what precedence was set for that fish. I mean, yeah. We've talked about a mutant, which is him, and he basically looks normal except for
right.
A little bit of some costume working, his feet kind of look webbed, and he's got, gills. And then... all of a sudden, we have this giant fish that just conveniently comes out.
Right.
Gives them dinner.
This is the thing that's kind of weird about this movie is it's not just the somewhat plausible, okay, the polar ice caps melted and now the Earth is covered in water. But there's also these other components to it, did we pollute or irradiate the atmosphere so much that we started creating these mutants as well? Later on that we get into, I guess the twist of it, which also has kind of a science fiction-y explanation to it. It's very strange.
I think, you made the point earlier and it's so very unclear, but, a lot of the stuff I was reading about the movie, they're it's never said, but apparently, somewhere somebody said the movie takes place in the year 2500. So
what?
Yeah. So it's
the same time the Master Chief finds the Covenant, basically.
so yeah, I mean, still, I don't think that's enough time for the evolution of giant fish, but
right.
I can't knock the fish.
I think you're off by maybe 60 million years for that one.
I can't knock the fish too much because, it's an eat or be eaten world. So, I pretty much eat anything that's smaller than me. So
And I don't think you have to invent something unique to get the same. It could have just been a killer whale, but I suppose killer whales are too Shamu cutesy to kill that way.
Also, I just realized that maybe if they Was that CGI? I don't even know what that was. I guess that was CGI.
It was.
I
mean, it had to be mostly.
Maybe if he did that with a whale, and like people would be like, "Oh, that looks fake." But because they sort of made up the animal, then it's like, "Oh, okay. Well, I can buy into that." But yeah, it could just been any other fish. But it's like, why didn't that come out any other time in a movie?
Clearly, it was a monster. Yeah, it had to die,
right? And everyone knows monsters taste good.
Right. I mean, that's like the whole mentality that like they were like, oh, mutant, we have to kill him without any explanation whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, if he's a mutant, you just call the Sentinels and they deal with him and he gets put on the list. Come on.
That's right.
So
he gives them dinner, cooks a nice meal.
He makes them a nice meal, and Triple Horn is like, you know what? She stole this crayon from you too. So take this, and oh, also she drew this for you, buddy. Like, I know you never saw, you were really interested in that paper earlier, but she drew this on some other paper. So why is that such a big deal? But anyway, so he gets a drawing of the three of them, like, holding hands. Clearly a drawing that she must be 9 or 10, that she should have been able to do a better drawing, because I'm a jerk like that.
it's clearly a 6-7-year-old drawing.
Yeah. Like,
she's a little bit behind, I think, in terms of development.
That's right. She can't even swim in Waterworld. Come on.
Yeah. So then he's like, I might be having some emotions, but he's not quite showing it.
I might be having some. These emotions are alien to my fish biology.
Yes, to my gill biology.
There's something stuck in my gill. It's emotion.
Again, at that point, it's not like it's like, you know, nighttime. It's quiet, maybe a little bit romantic, that he decides to kind of open up. It's like he's still done all these jerky things. Well, I mean, he made them dinner, but then she's like, "Oh, you know what? I think I'm going to go talk to him." It's just a lot of it is like, it doesn't really make any sense at all. Like, why she would approach him. I feel like this part could have been rewritten and like maybe he's like, oh, are you OK or something, or sorry about that thing back there. Or I don't know. that might have been kind of, I mean, I would have sympathized with his character more if that happened.
Instead, he just like gives the crayon back and he's like,
yeah,
it's alone. She's like, oh, yeah, sure. OK, whatever.
Yeah.
Arturo, who's listening and in the chat room, he's correcting me because, you know, literally he says, like, how many opportunities would you get in Waterworld to practice your drawing skills? So there's that. Especially if paper's such a commodity.
We're getting lots of hints about the girl's origin based on, you know, the kinds of things that she draws. But I think the fact that she can't swim is really intended to be the biggest hint of what her real origin is.
Speaking of which, the next day, because he's been able to sleep on it, I'm assuming he must sleep in the water because he's a fish, but the next day he's teaching her how to swim because now he's a nice guy or something. this is when it's like, I think we're supposed to see him changing, but anyway.
That's true. I mean, this part was kind of like, oh, then maybe there is something more to him. You know,
yeah,
there's
but it was
a little bit like there's this guy that's sort of, he's trying to find something in common, I guess, with her.
And, yeah.
I guess catalyzed by that drawing.
My great-great-grandfather Flipper used to do this with kids all the time.
You know, but then at the same time, like, from her perspective, he's just like another overbearing adult, right? Like, oh, this friggin' fish guy loves to swim, and now he thinks I have to swim. Man, I hate my parents, you know? Like, after their little interlude of swimming, they come on to a station built on a buoy. And Costner, this is when he speaks Portuguese, but they don't respond. Well, that's kind of weird. And Costner sees some debris in the water, so he gets suspicious. And he crawls into the hull of the boat and looks in his totally rad reverse periscope because it's underwater. And he sees, a bunch of smokers underwater on jet skis.
Not again.
So I was like, this is when I was getting, like, I was already out of the movie. So I'm like, so I don't see any of those guys wearing scuba gear. Like, how long have they been holding their breath underwater? So Costner's like, crap. So he's like, we got
to turn. It's a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe they're mutants too.
Yeah, that could be.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think so, because Dennis Hopper doesn't seem to like him very much. So
he never checked their ears.
That's true. Yeah. You have to do an ear inspection before you take out new guys. So Costner, he turns the boat, and the smokers, unfortunately, they all release themselves, come flying out of the water on their jet skis because stunt. And they have a net between all of their skis, so they're going to catch him. But this is, as I said before, looks sort of like a catamaran, but it's a trimaran. So they do the only sailing movie trick there is, which is to run to one side of a sailboat and lift up the other side over the net, which is totally... I totally got it. I was like, oh, yeah, isn't that... That's a fun... Yeah, okay. You see movies, they always have the boat, like... Yeah, okay. But there's three pontoons on this boat, so I don't even care if that one's above the water. Like, I'm so confused. like, every time they clear the net, I'm like, but no, just one pontoon went over it. Aren't the other two, like, caught in the net right now?
Right, like, right.
It really bothered me. And also, like, you know, I'm not an expert on catamarans, but I know most sailboats have, like, the biggest damn fin you've ever seen in the water.
True.
So they get away because run to the side of the boat and lean. In fact, they do like a scene where there's like there's a chair like out on the side of the boat that you sit on when you're leaning like that. So both the girl and Triplehorn get into it, and then Kevin Costner like jumps on the edge and like hangs off of it. Yeah, it was cheesy. So as they're driving away, Dennis Hopper's like kind of mad because this was his big plan. So he just shoots Kevin Costner in the back.
But have we mentioned the I think this is probably the most obvious case of CGI in this movie. But maybe it's
Kevin Costner.
Yes, Kevin Costner. Isn't this the part where the gigantic kite additional sail gets fired out in front?
That's right. Like, he pushes some lever and like a huge kite comes out of the front of the boat and they speed away, isn't it?
Yes. Even more sailing power.
More sails. Yeah, that was painfully CGI, right.
You know, they had a lot of things to focus on this movie, especially working on the dialogue and making sure the science is accurate. They didn't really have time for all the sailing to be realistic.
Right.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean, the compositing was probably crap, but I mean, whoever did that algorithm to make the wind look real in that kite was a badass CGC.
Yeah.
Quality work on there.
He's pretty frustrated at this point because what the hell's going on? They seem to be after this little girl. So, you know, what the hell is going on? Why does Dennis Hopper want a little girl? Because I didn't want anything to do with her until I swam with her. And so Triplehorn's like, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth. Like, the map on her back is to dry land. But he's like, well, that's just a myth. And she's like, dude, you had a jar of dirt when I met you, and your boat is full of all these strange things. Of course you've been to dry land. And he's like, so you want to see dry land? Fine, jump in the water here. And surprise, so he's got this he's got this sort of diving bell of sorts, and he swims next to it with her in it, and he lights flares as they go down to show her a city of like 30-story buildings underwater and cars and a crash submarine. And a chairlift, because apparently this city was really close to the mountains. I think it's like
it's an old New York from Futurama. It's all underground.
Meanwhile, the little girl, she's up on the boat and she sees a couple sharks go by, and you're like, ooh, and she seems concerned about that. And she stands up. But when Costner surfaces, oops, it's all the smokers. And so Dennis Hopper is on the boat, and he's like, you know, just tell us where the girl is. And they're like, well, she's not with us, because she's not. And when they don't talk, he's like, okay, fine. You know what? Let's just kill them both. And the little girl screams in her hiding place, which is in like one of the broken pontoons. And so they pick her up upside down, look at the map, and Costner jumps overboard with Triplehorn. And she's like, I can't breathe like you. And here comes the romance. He's like, I'll breathe for you.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll breathe for both of us.
I mean, that's got to be, I don't know, like, if anybody's ever made, like, a list of the top movie quotes of all time. I mean, that's probably up there. I'll breathe for you. If it isn't, then I, you know, that would be pretty disappointing. But I thought that bit was clever. But then I'm like, you know, it, like, they were down there for a really long time. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how he could sustain himself and, like, also breathe for himself. If that makes sense, because then, you know, he'd just be having her carb, like CO2, and yeah, it's weird. I mean, like, yeah. they were down there for a really long time.
They were, because the bad guys torch his boat, and when they surface, like, not even the pontoons are, like, around. Like, how does metal get, like,
yeah,
yeah, right.
So, meanwhile, Hopper is trying to sweet talk the little girl. Wherever their hideout is, and so then we cut back to Triplehorn, and she's still sort of reeling from the underwater kiss because Kevin Costner, right? She's trying to pull the whole "we're gonna die out here," so you know,
why might as well
just do it. Yeah. And you're like,
might as well have some mutant babies.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, well,
and he's like, you know what? You do have something I want. Just to tie it all back. Tie it all back to the beginning.
That's right. That's right.
I didn't like you before, but after breathing your CO2, I'm kind of lightheaded, so let's go ahead. Yeah. So that's it. Like, okay, we're going to die, so let's go ahead and do this. Like Cousin Walter and Mallrats.
Jesus.
And then you're like, okay, I guess the little girl's dead and the movie's over, right? Sure, Hollywood. So then after they're done making Whoopi, Costner finds the drawing, drawing that she did, and compares it to one of his National Geographics that he has hidden in a box in his boat. I'm sure it's not because there's naked Aboriginals in there. With his Sears catalogs and Victoria's Secrets. So, hey, that's curious that her drawing looks something like this picture of like an island. But oh well, we're gonna die. So what does it matter? Oh, hey, look, it's Michael Jeter and his flying balloon thing. He's like, you know, I would have never noticed you in this giant planet called Waterworld had I not seen the fire or the smoke from your boat getting burned.
Right.
I thought.
I mean, as corny as that part was, I was like, I can't believe, I didn't think he would come back. Because, I mean, like, they did set it up.
That he was there. And then
they paid that off. So that was, I mean, that's worth something. But still, the fact that he, I don't know what he sustained that, like, how long his hot air balloon could keep going on for without him having to, like, I don't know if he had food or water or anything up there for himself.
Does it make sense that he would just head toward any smoke on the side on the skyline?
Exactly, because it's like that's the thing you would want to go away from,
right? Oh, so, fire and water don't mix. Must be something interesting happening over there.
Science.
What is the smoke composed of? So he's like, you know. The funny part is, like, since none of us have empathy for Kevin Costner's character because they didn't do this film correctly, like, by the end of this film, you are one of the people of Waterworld who really hate mutants, I feel like. Like, you become a mutinist.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's like, well, where's the little girl? Where's Nola? And they're like, oh, like, Gene Triplehorn's like, you know, the smokers took her and they would have taken me, but, you know, this guy saved me. And so Michael Jeter's like, well, that's very human of you.
Which I was like, what a thing to say.
I know. I was like, wow, that was not a nice thing to say. That was kind of backhanded, buddy.
I thought they were trying to be diverse. So a mutant would actually help the population, wouldn't it? I mean, they're trying to reproduce. They're trying to...
Well, that's the thing. Like, if he's the dude that's got gills and can like swim underwater and stuff,
why would you all want that?
Even if, like, exactly,
yeah, there's a sliver of a chance you can breathe underwater, which is amazing because you're living in a water world, as you call it, and you can just go down and, you know, maybe find soil down there.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, it's weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the strong suggestion of the movie of where he's getting the dirt from, right? As he's just diving down and filling a jar.
So did they not know that, like, the ocean has an end to it? Right. Is everybody just like, oh, it's just like the infinite abyss? Or, because I feel like that's... Or is it like, oh, it's too far down. We can't go down that far. Pressure's going to kill us. So I don't know that part. I mean, it was unexplained, but I guess when he showed it to her, to Triple Horn or whatever, she was so surprised that I guess that suggests that nobody knows anything about what's underneath the ocean.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird. But to be honest with you, I don't know a lot of what's in the air I'm breathing right now. I'm in Canada, so mostly maple syrup, but horrible American jokes. So he flies them together on his flying machine to a few floats tied together, survivors from the atoll. And they're all arguing whether or not to go after the little girl. But, you know, Kevin Costner's like packing up everything because he's going to do it because there's something in the script notes that said change of heart or something. So meanwhile, Dennis Hopper and his crew are trying to figure the map out. And so the guys are like, hey, you know, we could cut it off of her back and then stretch the skin. We could see it better. And they really are all smoking. It's not just because they use gas. They really love cigarettes. So Costner's like, look, I'm going. And everyone's like, or Michael Jeter, who's like, very human of you earlier, he's like, oh, see this guy, fish guy, he wants to go to dry land. And he's like, no, I want to go save a little girl.
Excuse me, I'm a fish. Why would I want to go to land?
Right.
Right.
Put two and two together.
Like, come on. Okay, sure, whatever. So he jumps on a jet ski and now we're like, there's like a cloud and he pulls up to some muck and it looks like he's at the side of a very large ship and he starts climbing the convenient holes in the rusted side of the ship. And Dennis Hopper, meanwhile, is getting ready to speak to all the smokers.
Exhaust port in the Death Star.
And he has a little tete-a-tete with his portrait of Captain Joe Hazelwood, which is such a weird joke to have in this film. Because that's the guy who crashed the Exxon Valdez, the drunk captain. Mm-hmm. I guess it was topical at the time, maybe, but it's just still really weird. Like,
yeah,
we're supposed to be taking this movie seriously, and so
like it's worshiped a fantasy world, and then it's like, what? Real people?
Yeah, and like later on, like he says something like, "We're finally," or maybe now he's like, "We're gonna get that respect that you deserve, Captain Joe." And it's like, so if the things I'm reading online say this happened in 2500, do you still remember something that happened when there was dry land, but you don't remember dry land?
Definitely not any of the computers we couldn't even conceive of, or any of that stuff showing up, being talked about. No, we're gonna go back to the 80s.
Yeah. What's that? What did you find on the bottom of the ocean there, Mariner man? What's that? An Apple IIe? What about dirt? I want dirt. I don't want that old Apple computer. What am I going to do with that? Give me some dirt. I'm hungry.
Everything that happened within that span of 500 years, just poof.
So Hopper, he's going to go talk to everyone. It turns out they're on the deck of a giant an oil tanker ship. So this must be their secret hideout. So he throws out like some canned food and smokes for everyone, and he promises to find them dry land in his like little "Don't cry for me, Argentina" speech.
And he uses a lot of, I guess, appropriately given what his self proclaimed title is, but they've sort of turned this whole like consumption in progress and religion kind of thing.
Yeah, I was gonna
going
say
on.
Too. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's sort calls of like Joe Saint Joe and, right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, and it was it's like you know, is this part of the mythos or is it just like part of his like really comedic villain character? Like,
right. Yeah, it's hard to tell. Yeah. Like, are they trying to make some sort of commentary here? Because it's not very strong, or it's absent,
or is the
really.
Joke on us, you know? So after all that climbing, like imagine how much climbing you would have to do to climb the side of an oil tanker. Kevin Costner sees two guys on jet skis find his empty jet ski, so he jumps back into the water.
Jesus.
He's like, what are you doing? And then he grabs one of the jet skis of the three that he now has, and he rides a ramp up into the boat, right into a dude.
And which so, wasn't a very nice thing to do.
So while Hopper is speaking, it's intercut with A, Kevin Costner coming and picking up like clothing and killing dudes, like murder, yep. death, kill, seriously. The little girl talking him up to evil Carrot Top, who's like asking her questions. She's like, oh, he's coming for you, and like he won't stop until he kills you, and all this stuff. It's like a way worse scene than that scene in like Braveheart, where like they're all talking about William Wallace like and his deeds as he travels across the country. Hopper like then grabs a girl and takes her out onto the balcony and shows her to the crowd. And he says, you know what? Let's get this tanker mover because we're going to dry land. So everybody runs below because, you know, you got to get the ship moving and it's a big oil tanker. So what are you going to do? Everyone gets out big, long paddles to paddle the oil tanker. Big oars.
As you do.
As you do. Like a Viking ship. I was like, what the what?
Yeah, somehow they've maintained all of these jet skis, airplanes, other kinds of boats, but the oil tanker's engines are just too complicated.
It's got to be paddled.
So as everyone is rowing, Hopper's right-hand dudes, like Evil Carrot Top, are asking him, like, well, where are we going? Because we don't know how to figure out the map yet. And Dennis Hopper's like, oh, whatever, you know. They just needed something to do. It's cool.
They'll row for at least a month before they figure out that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And so
buy me some time to examine her back once more.
Yes. Because it might have changed.
Yes.
So as tattoos do. So they're like, hey, who's that walking across the deck that's not rowing? Uh-oh, it's Kevin Costner. Dennis Hopper in his like comedic villain repertoire pulls out with, if it isn't like Gentleman Guppy, which I thought was quite clever. And he's like, you're like the turd that won't flush.
Do you have toilets? Do they have some sort of a system that's already built like that? Or is he just using terms from a time long gone? He doesn't know what they mean.
It's true. We do that, right? So Costner walks over to a pipe that goes to the oil, and he's like, look, I'm going to go ahead and drop this flare in here, and all of you die.
Oh, no, that's the exhaust part.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Nailed it.
Not so much then, bigger than 2 meters.
Oh, so yeah.
Dennis Hopper's like, well, you're not going to do that, man. And then Kevin Costner just drops it because we've established in this film that
he cares about no one and nothing.
Yeah. Right. So everything starts to go boom, there's a weird shot. I didn't write it in my notes, but so earlier.
There's a shot where he's like, I used to bullseye womp rats on my T-16 back home. He's like, I'll do it. Like I did with the womp. Yeah, sorry. Go.
No, I was just going to say earlier when Hopper like had to go see something important. There was like this half naked little old man with the giant pop bottle glasses on like a boat in the oil tanker who's like, the black stuff's getting low. Like that's right. When they found out they're running out of fuel. So apparently he just like lives down there in the tank. So when the flare comes down, like they just show a close up of him or like behind his back or something. He's like, finally.
So sad. That was the darkest thing in the film. I don't even know what to feel about that.
It was just bizarre.
I know he came back for the girl, but he like murdered at least like 100 more people that probably didn't deserve it. I mean, they can't all be bad. I mean, like they're just hungry. They want spam. They want to find land. And he's like, I'll kill all of you to get her back. So
he murdered like enough people that like if he just like piled the bodies like on the oil tanker, like eventually they would have become soil. Like he would have had dry land. There's a lot of people on this boat. So they start shooting at him and he runs towards the bowels of the ship, even though they're on fire, which seems counter to me, but he's a fish. What does he know? So evil Carrot Top goes after him in the car, which again, another weird scene. He's like, I've always wanted to drive this monster. I was like, well, thanks for adding that, I guess.
Right.
So Costner eventually finds his way onto the platform where Hopper was speaking from. But hey, look, now Hopper's down on the deck of the boat. Oops. I guess you guys didn't. It's a big ship. You missed each other. Here comes Evil Carrot Top. And so he's probably going to kill you. And his gun doesn't work, which is kind of convenient. So Costner shoots him. It was kind of lackluster.
Did we see him using it before? Like
the gun?
Like just like, you know, was he firing rounds or anything? And then he got to like the 6-1 or the whatever.
No, I don't. He kind of had like a blunderbuss kind of a thing, like a weird like rifle or a shotgun kind of a thing throughout the movie. But I don't know.
I mean, like what a clever thing to have done is like, oh, it's like you use up your last. But it's just he's like, oh, what a convenient. Like he could have killed him right there.
Yes. What a stroke of luck. Speaking of luck, here's a spear gun with a rope attached. Yeah. So I guess I'll shoot that across the ship. He didn't bring it with him. He just sees it in a pile. So he shoots that across the ship and then slides down so that he doesn't have a plan, I don't think, but he slides down so they can get near the plane. And then Costner, as the plane is like going across the boat to take off, he grabs this big anchor, which was probably very heavy, and he jumps and throws it at the plane while apparently the other end of this rope and the anchor is attached to the ship. So, of course, he gets it. This is like the old trick that they do in like 50s and 60s movies where like you chain someone's axle in their car to a telephone pole. When they go to take off, their car just pulls apart. So the plane gets pulled apart and falls back down, and he simply grabs Nola. And cool. And you know what? Now the ship's on fire, so really what we need... Oh, hey, look, it's Triplehorn and Jeter and the Peacekeeper guy. They're in the airship, and they're going to pick him up. Hey, that's lucky. Which is funny because they're all like debating, and then Kevin Costner just left. He's like, I'm gonna go get her, you guys do whatever you want. And they're like, no, we're gonna help him. No, we're not. And then like they didn't fight at all, they just picked them up. So here comes Dennis Hopper. He's not really dead yet because he's the villain. So he's like grabbed onto their rope and he's climbing it with them. So then I think it was Triplehorn just grabs a wrench or something and throws it at him.
I have had enough of you.
And then like the little girl kicks him in the head and down he goes. So he's in the water. They're climbing up to the balloon. And then they get in and then Dennis Hopper, you know, he finds like a gun or something in all the wreckage or the water where he is.
So, and you know, with his amazing depth perception, he then lands his next shot.
Yes, he shoots the balloon, and apparently Enola, or the little girl, she falls in the water. And so Dennis Hopper's like, well, that was a good shot. Lucky me. So he jumps on a jet ski so he can go to collect her. Not so fast, because this is 1995 and we love extreme sports. So Kevin Costner ties a rope to his feet and says, tie the rest of it to the balloon because I'm about to bungee jump, mothers. So it's ridiculous. Like, the whole time you're like, boy, he seems like a cartoony villain. And then there's two other smokers on jet skis. So they have this like shot from the balloon, apparently. So you see like three smokers converging on the little girl in the water. And so Kevin Costner drops in on his bungee cord, lifts her out of the water, and those three jet skis crash into each other.
Classic.
Like, and no. Explode in almost a larger fireball than the Exxon Valdez did.
I swear to God, there was a point. So where he like bounced back up, there was an explosion, and then he was like about to descend again back into the fire. And then they just cut to like, yes. I don't know, something else. And I'm like, he could have just died right there.
Wow, that was
back
really smart
out. Yeah, you back out into the fire, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess he got pulled up, but
they bounce up and everyone's like cheering. That was really smart. And they go down, they bounce up, and there's just like two fried bodies. Oh,
so close.
Sorry, we're going long tonight because we're having fun talking about how great this film is.
It's true.
So they had to dry land, and they're. They're like starved and without water, and time passes, and you're like, oh man, wouldn't it be a bummer if I spent all this time watching this horrible Kevin Costner, not Nick Cage movie, and they didn't find land. But of course the seagull lands on the little skid of the balloon, and oh hey, look, they found dry land. And so they get off the boat, and like the first thing, like they get off in some rocks, because why would you land on a beach? I don't know. And the professory character is like, oh, look, fresh water, too. We've solved all our problems.
but he says it in the accent, so it yes. makes it all the better.
Yes, and because, like, this whole time, like, you know, we weren't, like, dead set on finding dry land. We need to know, as the viewers, why he's a fish person. No, we need to know, like, where the little girl came from. And so for no reason at all, they show us like two dead bodies and some drawings of the map in some little hut. And there's like a music box that the little girl whines. And I think it's probably the song she was humming earlier in the film. And so
she's like,
yeah,
the magic say line.
What?
I'm home.
Yeah. Does she say that?
Yeah, she does. When she she opens the music box, she says, "I'm home."
I think that was really revealing, but I have to admit, like, it took me a while to catch on to it. I mean, I guess that was clever, but it means a few things. Like, she has to have remembered some of that, but didn't they get her like in a basket or something?
Well, you know, and so I'm like, okay. Like, I see where you're coming from with that. But then what bothered me was they find, like, two skeletons, like, bone-white skeletons. And she's obviously, like, 9 or 10. I don't think if I die right now podcasting here and they don't find me for 10 years, you're just going to see some bones here. You're going to see some pretty disgusting, like,
it'll be some mummified. CSI, some bones yes. level stuff. You yes. know what? The thing is, it was – I mean, it is – a forest, I guess, so it's pretty humid.
Oh, that's sure. true.
Yeah. I'm trying to save this movie right now. I don't know why I'm trying to do this.
One of the that's two the, used to be Sean Connery.
Yes. This is probably yeah. like, that's what probably Waterworld 2 is like the like Waterworld 2.
It's a prequel.
The horror of dry land. And yeah. like, there's probably this like flesh eating bugs that like just eat all flesh.
Yeah, they could have been mutants, you know?
Mutant bugs, yeah.
Mutant bugs eating off the...
The good news is we found dry land. The bad news is it's Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's the perfect segue. I thought this end scene was really reminiscent of the end of The Land Before Time, where he found, like, that... I don't know where they were looking for, but it was, like, this really, really nice home with just, like, great waterfalls. Yeah. Like, a lush sort of... For it was kind of... It was nice, but I... Yeah... For what's about to follow and what you're going to explain, I didn't really buy into it.
Yeah, because the whole time they're on land, Kevin Costner is like freaking out because like he's hearing like birds and all these land noises, and he's like, "I am a fish." This is so so very wrong. Everyone's like, "Oh, I love the feel of the sand in my feet," and he's like, "I don't have feet. I have flippers. I hate you."
Yeah. I'm a fish out of water.
And he sees like this old boat. And so then just like in the next scene, like the boat is on the beach and he's saying goodbye to everyone.
Come visit. Like he's visited that metal island or whatever. Like I presumably he keeps going back and forth to there. So I don't know like why it's such a big, you know, dramatic goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of funny, too. I mean, ridiculously corny, but, like, the little girl's like, why can't you say, like, you know, Professor Dude says we're just all suffering from land sickness. He'll get over it.
Land sickness. Like, 4.5 billion years we've evolved to be on land. And then it's like, now we're all like fish.
Yes. I feel so weird when, like, the ground isn't undulating underneath me. I hate this. Must be land sickness. So she's like, fine. And she gives him the music box and kisses him and runs away. And then he has to say, like, goodbye to Triple Horn, which I don't know what – I don't remember. Does he just, like, kiss her or awkwardly grab her breasts again?
but she doesn't flinch this time. So, I mean, he's come a long way.
She makes like a half disgusted face this time instead of the full one. Yeah. And we watch Costner sail away and end the movie. Because he is forever the Mariner. Dun, dun, dun. Like he's the gunslinger in the Old West. Like he just comes to town, set the thing right, and then he leaves. Sure. Whatever. So, yes, we've gone very long because there's a lot of holes in this wet movie.
A girl leaves the island and a stranger comes to Waterworld.
It's really hard to say that it's hard to say that I enjoy the film when, like, Kevin Costner like has less lines than Wilson the volleyball in Castaway, which I really enjoyed the volleyball more than Kevin Costner.
I think he has like his dialogue has less screen time than him peeing into that distillation.
That's so true. So what did you think, Armin? Was this like movie like so bad that
loved
you
it.
Actually
loved it? It was great. I loved it. I mean, here's the thing, like halfway through it, I was like, I don't even know why I'm watching this. I don't know what to feel. Like, I don't know how I expect this to get better towards the ending. And even at some point, I think my brother was listening to me watch a movie and he's like, it just sounds like there's some domestic abuse going on. What's going on? And he like looked at the screen and surely enough, like Costner like hit. Or like he threw the girl into the water. So, I think those kind of weird ultra aggressive male dominant vibes I really didn't like, and they didn't really redeem that in any way in the film, which I think would have made it like way better, even like the corny dialogue aside. I have to say it's probably I would give it. One piss bottle out of five. I'm glad to have seen it because I know. I don't know. It's a landmark, I guess, in movie history. But I'm glad to have seen it to know that that's where world building can go wrong, because it's really difficult to do,
yeah,
to get an audience to believe in your story. But I feel like the medium was wrong. I could have totally enjoyed this as a graphic novel, maybe, or if I read it like in a novel, I don't know, maybe when I was younger or something, I might have enjoyed it. And it sounds all right. The premise is kind of cool, and it reminded me a little bit of Fallout, post-apocalyptic stuff. Go by.
Mm-hmm.
It's just execution-wise, I think either, it's wrong people or wrong time, wrong director, something along those lines. So,
yeah. It's as Paul alluded, I will say it's definitely not a Dolomite or a Zardoz. It's not so bad that it's entertaining. It's just bad, I think.
Yeah. Like
Dennis Hopper, to me, redeems some of the film. But again, I think I established that Dennis Hopper redeems this film because he's making fun of it.
Yes. Yeah.
It's what's really awkward is auditioning, as I like to call it, other movies for this podcast. I recently watched a film called Space Truckers starring Dennis Hopper. And I think that's from like 97 or 96.
Yeah.
And he's almost playing like the same character. He's not the villain, but he's just like everyone is like doing this like serious comedy. I mean, as much as you can be serious in like a comedy, but they're playing it straight, and he's not. So it's kind of hilarious. But what about you, Paul? Was it, where do you put this?
Yeah, it's
mediocre. I think we lost Paul there.
It's mediocre at best. It's mediocre at best. I feel like it has the elements, but it doesn't have the execution, which is what I think Armin was kind of getting at. And the execution is so poor on this. And there's definitely parts of it that are like Kevin Costner's almost unwarranted aggression against everybody that he runs into does not really make that much sense. I mean, it kind of makes sense from the perspective of he's a mutant, and if they find out he's been through this rigmarole before, but he's just like fairly actively aggressive against people and he does not need to be, especially when it comes to the women who can't really fight back. At least the way that they're portrayed in this movie, they're not particularly strong characters and would not fight him back. So
I think what we're all saying is that, there's the problem with this movie is it could have been a really good bad movie if it was like a straight up action movie, or if it was like a straight up like children's film, but it just tried to ride both.
Yes, exactly. If it had, and I think it's closer, honestly, I think it's closer to a children's film. There's probably five key scenes that you could pull out of this movie that would shorten it by 15, 20 minutes that would make it a lot better. It would probably make it a lot. It's one of those things where you get addition by subtraction by just getting rid of a couple of things that kind of make the characters people you don't particularly want to identify with, or just don't help advance the plot in any way.
I have a scary question for all of you. What do you think, if you got this on DVD, what do you think would be in the deleted scenes?
I'm scared to answer that because I feel like you know the answer and it scares me that you watched it.
No, I have not.
But oh, okay.
I just, I don't know. I feel like...
So...
already what Paul said, there's so much that, could have been left out to make it better, that if they further expanded on any of it, I don't think it would be helping the movie all that much, especially with all the aggressive. But maybe I feel like there might have been more childish parts to it.
Yeah,
I get the feeling too. I think it's close to a children's movie, which makes it a bit weird when there's people dying and
yeah.
But
so, well, I mean, adding to the lore of this film is the fact that Costner and this director worked together on a few occasions, and apparently they got along. In fact, Costner said he wouldn't do this movie unless this guy directed it, because they wanted
to be buddies. Weirdly,
they wanted Robert Zemeckis, which I cannot see doing this film. But anyway, the studio did, but they hired this guy because Costner wanted it. And then the rumor, there's a rumor like that this guy walked off the set, the director, but he still gets credit for the film because it's a crazy rule in Hollywood. But he walked off with like 2 weeks to go because he was like had enough of like Costner. And then the other thing is like that's the rumor. And then some other rumor is that like Kevin Costner and him got into an argument and Costner got him fired. So whether he walked off or he got fired, he left before this film was finished and Costner finished it, like directed it.
So, he reportedly threw him off a boat or something like that and he couldn't swim. And there was this whole thing about crayons involved. And
right. Yeah. I mean, obviously I think there's some problems with this film, and it sounds like there were people, I think that it was either IMDb or, Wikipedia, where there was like problems with, Costner on set as well. Like he, was sort of like trying to take charge and do things his own way, and people, he wanted scenes done in different ways and yeah. So that's the rumors anyway. So I can kind of see with the finished product that there was some problems because this.
Yeah, it's like, yes. If you enjoy making something, the audience will enjoy it. So I can't imagine what it'd be like. You know, if you're having a miserable time on set and you're like getting into fights and stuff, and just, yeah. So much that it like people are finding out about it too. So,
instead of this bad movie, what would you recommend listeners watch, Armin?
You know what. I was getting with like the whole I forget what the bad guys in this movie are called.
Smokers.
I think the Smokers kind of reminded me of Raiders. So then I instantly thought of Mad Max.
Yeah, this is like
and Mad Max. So that movie, there's a new one coming out, I think, this year. But
yeah, there's a remake.
I was getting that kind of vibe with like everyone to kill each other. So I don't know. I would recommend probably either that movie or like Road Warrior. I don't know. I don't think it's worth watching this. I think it's worth looking up the plot summary. I guess depends what genre or where, if we're talking about new movies or old movies, but
right.
Yeah. You know what? Just see Blade Runner and save yourself the trouble. Because that's right there is a classic movie. Has a little bit of, you know, of a rapey vibe to it, similar to this. It's great at world building. That's actually an example of where it's done well. And I think it's also a good example of how you justify the odd quirks of your world, with a lot of which were not sort of in this movie, and just sort of like, and the background of the character like is like, you know, half human, half fish. Well, if you look at what's his name, Deckard, he could be a robot,
right?
I got similar feelings between those two movies. Blade Runner for sure.
They're doing a sequel to that too, aren't they?
What? What?
I do not know. Paul, what do you recommend?
This recommendation is for people who have already seen Waterworld, whether intentionally or accidentally in some way. And my recommendation is to see Michael Bay's Armageddon and then pretend that Michael Bay did Waterworld.
Nice.
That's true.
Because if you could take like the cartoony, extreme, stereotypical characters out of Armageddon and then just put them in Waterworld, you would have had a really good a movie that was truly so bad it's good. I think that would have been the right mix of director and style.
So,
and but it probably would have needed yet another $100 million in budget.
So I am more of a car guy than a boat guy. So I saw Mad Max when I was younger, and I don't think I quite got why it was so popular, because it was just so many people saying you have to see this movie. And so I watched it under that premise. So I was going to recommend a movie that I watched not too long ago from the late 70s, maybe early 80s, called Damnation Alley, starring George Peppard. And I forget what sort of apocalyptic thing happens to the Earth. But anyway, they go out in these two like space age type vehicles to look for survivors. And it's sort of about the survivors rather than about the doomsday thing happening. And it was definitely more clean than this movie and entertaining. But then as we talked about the movie and we talked about how cartoonish it is and how it is water features big into the film, I couldn't stop thinking about the Don Knotts movie, The Incredible Mr. Limpet, where he gets he wishes that he could join the Navy and he can't. So he's like, man, if I was a fish, they would take me. And he's at Coney Island and he makes that wish and falls in the water and miraculously turns into a cartoon fish. So and he helps the Navy like sink some Nazi U-boats and stuff. It's actually quite an entertaining film. I haven't seen that one in ages, okay. But I remember liking it. I think they're actually remaking it with some new comedic actor. But yeah, actually, I'm probably going to watch that again because now I've thought about it.
Maybe you should see I could also recommend if you have not seen Waterworld, don't. And then watch Splash with Tom Hanks.
Ooh, more fish people. Love it. That is a good movie. Cool. So, wow, 2 hours. We've never done that. Rock and roll. So, yeah, let's cut this off.
Before it's as long as Waterworld.
Yeah. It's true. Armin, if people want to find you, you have a website, you have social media or something they can find you, or maybe you don't want to be found.
maybe I want to be mysterious. I want to go off swimming by myself because I'm a fish. I have a blog, which I do some of my cartoony things on. Recently did like a musical comic, which is like a comic you read, but you like listen to a song to it, to like the lyrics. And I'm kind of proud of that, but it's biasedcat.blogspot.ca. I've done a few of those. I'm planning on adding more content. I've just been lazy, but yeah, that's where you can find my cartoon endeavors.
Cool. Awesome. I'm glad you joined us. Paul, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I am at Paul D. And you can also read my blog at padizio.com, PADIZIO.com.
Cool.
Slash blog. Or just go to the homepage and there's a link to the blog and a link to lots of other places that I can be found on the web.
Gnarly. Nice. Keeping in with the water theme. Hey, I'm on Twitter. You can find me at sickdays, SIKKDAYS, or you can try sickdays.me to find other places you can find me. You can find this show on iTunes and you can rate us there. Love us or hate us, just like we do with the movies. That's cool. But rate us. Because that's what you say when you do a podcast. You beg people to rate you on iTunes.
It's true.
So next week, Paul and I are back with Montreal Sauce. We're talking to an illustrator from the Archer TV show. And then 2 weeks, Film Frown is back with the movie The Chopping Mall from 1986 because robots. That's awesome.
Yes.
and yeah. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks again to Armin for taking time. The semester is done, but he's still at school so that he can do this.
Thanks for having me on.
Sweet.
It was pretty fun.
Cool. And hope to have you back soon. So, yes, as What is my Buckaroo Banzai quote that I usually sign off with?
The Montreal sauce is what you put on poutine.
Or... Boom. Close enough.
Something
I like,
like
it.
That. Yeah.
Nice. No, it's a quote from Buckaroo Banzai I like to sign off with. I think he says, just remember wherever you are, there you are. Yes.
Good night, everybody.
Great.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie. Thank you for coming out to the drive-in tonight. As you leave, please drive carefully and come back soon. Please replace the speaker on its rack when you're ready to leave. Failure to do so will damage both the speaker and your car. We'll be grateful, and so will the patrons who follow you.